Lucas Duda is hitting 279, 385, 598. What does Lucas Duda have to do to get the respect that he deserves while he's healthy?
Episode 136 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP fantasy team. Guys, what's going on tonight?
Dylan G is what's going on tonight.
He's pitching poorly.
What year is this?
It's 1994.
I don't think
the G-Funk era.
Yeah, we will not be talking about him tonight, though. Nobody fabbed him in any of the leagues.
I am expecting a lively discussion about Eric Young Jr., so you have that to look forward to, everybody. We've got a pretty cool show. We're going to do the second half of our rankings in-season updates. They went up on BP last week, so you can check those out and follow along with us. We're going to cover shortstop, third base, second base, first base, and catcher. So basically the entire infield today. We did outfielders, starting pitchers, and relievers on the last episode. So make sure you go check that out. I'm here in New England. It's like 48 degrees and raining right now, so it doesn't feel like baseball weather, but we got a pretty good show. Let's go over a little bit of housekeeping first. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. Brett is at at Dynasty Guru. This is old copy here. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella. You can subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or whatever app you use to listen to this podcast. Every rating or review helps us out tremendously. I'll plug the BP ballpark events later on in the show, but we have the first one coming up later on this month. You should definitely go to BP and order your tickets today. That's a lot of housekeeping, guys. So you ready to do this second part of the rankings debate here?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's go.
Awesome. Let's start with shortstops. I think that's the most compelling position we have left on the board here. And if you look at the five-star tier, it's comprised of five players. Manny Machado obviously is the big name, but I want to talk about Francisco Lindor for a minute because he's doing something that we didn't expect, which is hitting more fly balls, hitting for more power. He's got 12 home runs already, and it's the second week of June here. So he's on pace to maybe hit over 20 home runs, but he's not running anymore. So I'll start with you, Mike. What do you think about Lindor this year? Because I don't think we could have seen this level of power output coming from him.
No, and he seems to be, and I want to be cautious with this because, you know, I know there's always questions with these data. He seems to be a launch angle guy, and he's benefiting from that and has changed his swing and approach somewhat. And I don't even really need the data to see that. You can see that when you watch Lindor. It's not that he's swinging for the fences, but he's definitely has more of an uppercut than he's had in the past, and you know that reflects in the results. So yeah, the thing with Lindor, it's not only the steals or lack thereof. You know, and he's got three, so it could be one of those things where he steals runs more in the second half and finishes with 10-12. What jumps out at me is that batting average. You know, he's hitting 268, which is fine, but a lot of his value in past years came with the batting average. So what I could see with Lindor is, you know, I buy the five-star rating, but I don't see him clearing, you know, into that elite super top tier status unless the average comes back. And, you know, right now, based on the way he's hitting, I don't think it will. I mean, I could be wrong. Average is fickle, but what Lindor's done so far looks like for better and for worse is the Lindor we're going to see the rest of the way.
Yeah, he is a 269 BABIP right now. So he's been over 320 the last 2 years in the major leagues. So that's definitely something to watch. And Brett, that kind of ties back to my original question, though. Is this a good thing for Lindor's value that he's hitting for more power? Because I can see this sort of establishing a higher floor if he's going to consistently get to this, you know, threshold in terms of home run output. But does this maybe limit the upside, like Mike was talking about, if he's not going to hit for a high batting average or steal as many bases?
It really depends where the batting average falls. I mean, you talk about his BABIP. I don't, given the change in his batted ball output, I don't think you can really compare. Oh my God. Wait, you know.
What just Sorry. Happened?
Sorry, Joey Gallo home run.
Oh, those Almost. Are great. Those are great. Majestic.
Yep. No, Joey Gallo home run. Yeah, that was a Joey Gallo home run.
It's still
what
going.
Was I saying? this distracts me. Yeah, the BABIP, I don't think if you're looking at his career BABIP and saying, oh, he's gonna bounce back and hit 300 the rest of the way, I think that's short sighted. You know, with more fly balls comes a lower BABIP, I mean, just naturally. But, you know, the funny thing is that Francisco Lindor is having Addison Russell's breakout season.
Yeah.
And I think that this isn't the Lindor that people were expecting. It's a valuable Lindor, but yeah, I think it does lower his ceiling long term just because, you know, This is where the game is going. It's a concentration towards power, and you know Lindor was sort of the zag at the position where he was going to give you a lot of value and average and runs and some speed, and you know those guys are just seem like they're dwindling by the day, which yeah, I mean value is value, but that probably the scarcity of what he used to be providing versus what he is providing probably knocks him down a couple bucks.
There aren't a lot of other surprises in the five-star tier. You have Corey Seager, Carlos Correa, who's having a really monster season. The last week alone, I think he hit, what, 4 home runs and drove in like 10. So Correa's really heated up lately. Trey Turner's the other name in this tier. And I think when you look at the four-star tier, the first guy who stands out to me is Xander Bogaerts, just because he has not hit for a ton of power this year. He's picked it up recently a little bit. But I think he went without a homer the first 2 months of the year, and this is something that you know has been discussed about on Tino and some other programs as it relates to his long-term value. But Mike, in a redraft context, is there any concern here with Xander Bogaerts? Because I believe we had him in the five-star tier in the preseason. So what is it that's dropped him back into the four stars?
Well, it is just that lack of home runs and as much value. You know, the positive with Bogaerts is he's running, and not only is he running, he's running, you know, very well and picking his spots and using his speed to his advantage, and the average is there, and he's still a great hitter. But as long, you know, you have to have a certain amount of home runs to get into the five-star tier. Like, it's just really, you know, unless he's going to go out and hit 370 or 380 and be like Wade Boggs 2.0, it's just really difficult to put a hitter with this little power in the five-star tier. So that's the issue. You know, it is worth pointing out for later this week, I'm doing the next, update on my only league values. Bogaerts and AL only is still a top 10 hitter even without the power, so there's value there for sure. It's just that in these articles are more for mixed league, like a 12 or 15 team format. You do want somebody, you know, unless he's Billy Hamilton or like I use the ridiculous Boggs example. You do want some power, you know, out of your middle infielder in a mixed league, particularly in this contemporary context where everybody, you know, is good for like 15 or seems are good for 15 or 20 home runs.
Yeah, I mean, he's batting third in that lineup. So assuming guys like Mookie Betts, Andrew Benintendi, and Hanley Ramirez get it going, that the counting stats should be there to really buoy his value. But Brett, I know you've talked about Bogaerts a lot on this program and in other places, but he's kind of oscillated between the guy who hit for batting average and the guy who hit for power. where do you see him settling in the rest of this season? Because it seems like he's always been between one of those extremes in his profile.
Yeah, I don't know whether he can quite do what we want him to do kind of all at the same time. But, you know, I think there is still, yeah, if I had to put a pace on him for the rest of the way, I'd say my expectations are for him to be on sort of a, you know, 15 to 20 home run pace. And, you know, with the batting average, I think the batting average probably ticks down a little bit over the rest of the season, but not much. I mean, he's shown that he can hit for average over his career so far. And, you know, he looks, talk about Lindor looking different now than we thought. I mean, Bogaerts looks different than we thought in kind of the exact opposite way. But, you know, whereas Lindor's swap makes him slightly less attractive, I think Bogaerts' continued ability to contribute in the unsexy fantasy categories, you know, does the opposite for him.
Yeah, just to update that, Bogaerts is sixth overall among hitters in AL only heading into tonight's action, behind Mike Trout, Aaron Judge, Jose Altuve, Elvis Andrus, and Corey Dickerson. So fun year. A lot of unpredictable names at the top of that chart.
Yeah, I've heard of a few of those guys. Elvis Andrus is another guy who we've talked about a lot on this podcast, I should say. He's also in this 4-star tier. I won't rehash it there, but he's hitting for a lot more power than we expected, and having the speed really helps him out. But the next guy that I think we do need to focus on, Mike, is Jonathan Villar. At what point does the batting average become unpalatable? Because I've heard both arguments here that, you know, obviously the speed and what he can provide in that department is enough to make him a viable fantasy option no matter what. But do you think the batting average bounces back? Is he striking out too much? And at what point do you really start to get concerned about the batting average with him?
I think we're just about there. Like, it's really, you know, one of those things where, you know, he's again in an only format, you're kind of okay with him and you can live with that batting average and you'll just kind of suck along because he's doing a lot everywhere else. You know, you mentioned Andrus, like VR, his numbers are similar to Andrus's except the batting average.
Right.
The problem is that a hitter like this in a mixed league, it's the batting average, but it's also the fact that you're losing runs. You're losing runs batted in because he's not getting as many opportunities to get on base or as many hits. So I'm already concerned with VR, quite honestly. He's somebody even with those steals in a standard or shallow mixed, I'm looking at replacements or looking for somebody who might be an upgrade on him. And some of that is middle infield is so much thicker this year than we've seen it in years.
Yeah, Gene Segura is on the disabled list. That's going to be a pretty lengthy injury for him, probably. Eduardo Nunez is in this tier. And then you have Chris Owings. If you would like Chris Owings content, please go listen to the Tino podcast. There's a lot of it on there. The 3-star tier, I think, is interesting because Trevor Story, I mean, Brett, what do you do with Trevor Story at this point if you own him in a redraft league? Because obviously he's going to hit for power, but he's not really giving you a whole lot else in terms of batting average, and that can really sink you. So what do you do with Trevor Story if you own him in a redraft?
I mean, this is kind of Trevor Story. This was the Trevor Story that we thought was going to be around before he did just obscene things last year. I think, you know, the power, I think, is real. I don't think anyone's really questioned that. I mean, last year was overstating the case. But, you know, Story and Coors is, you know, 25 homer potential every year. He's on pace for, you know, just about 25 right now. And, you know, the strikeouts are always going to be there. He's not particularly fast. I don't think his stolen base numbers, people expect his stolen base numbers to translate. I mean, he was a 20 steal guy in the minors for a bit, but that's not really who he is. I think he is, you know, a 240 to 250 hitter, even with Coors with 25 homers, and there's certainly value to be had in that, but I think the people who had those expectations from him after last season have sort of come off of them by now, and I think everyone's a little bit more realistic about what he is. I do want to jump back to VR for a second, because I'm kind of on the other end of that spectrum. I'm really not worried about VR all that much. VR has always been a very high BABIP guy. He keeps the ball on the ground. I think he's gotten sort of unlucky. I think he was never going to hit 285 again. I think 250 to 260 was a reasonable expectation going into the season. And even though his strikeout rate's up a tiny bit this year from last year, it's up, not a tiny bit. It's up 5 percentage points, which is not insignificant. I think he'll hit 250-ish from here on out. I don't think he's going to continue to hit in the barely above the Mendoza line. But the problem with VR is that he's just not stealing as much. I mean, you can swallow everything else if he's getting you 60 steals. If he's getting you 40 steals, then it's a different proposition. So he's going to have to do one of those two things, but I think the batting average will kind of take care of itself a little bit over the next couple months, as long as you're not unrealistic about what the end expectation is.
Yeah, I think too, if the batting average bounces back, it also sort of entrenches him at the top of that lineup, which has been a concern lately, because they have used Sogard there. They've used Keon Broxton against lefties there. So that's definitely something to watch. We could spend the next hour talking about shortstops because it's just a fascinating position. I don't know. Do you guys want to talk about Addison Russell here? Is there anything to say at this point other than that he's just really struggling and it's hard to own him in a mixed league?
Yeah, I don't think there's really a ton to say about him. I think he'll grow into being pretty solid, but I just don't know when that's going to be at this point. He's still very young.
There are whispers among the many Cub people I follow on Twitter, and I mean not just like fans, but people who write about the team, that his shoulder might not be right, and who knows? But obviously, that would be having an effect on his hitting if that's the case.
Yeah, it does not sound great. One guy who is having a fantastic season though is Zach Cozart. He was put in the 2-star tier, and I'm interested in that ranking for a couple of reasons, because I believe he's leading National League shortstops in home runs, batting average, and slugging percentage right now. So he's been fantastic. He has 9 home runs. He's hitting .348, slugging .620. He also has 2 steals. How much of this ranking, Mike, is the fact that he does have a lengthy injury history and he could potentially be traded by the Reds at some point? Are those the two main factors that went into this ranking?
This is Brett's ranking, so you should probably ask him. Do you want me to speculate, Brett, or do you want to give the reason for the ranking?
you can speculate.
My guess is that it's just Cozart's track record, and I know it's the gambler's fallacy, but it's the idea that as good as he's been, and as much as some of these changes are sustainable, it's just difficult to believe that Zach Cozart is going to, be the National League MVP and finish with the highest WARP in the National League. It just doesn't seem likely. So if that happens, you're looking at a second half where there's some power, but there's a severe correction and he comes back to earth. Right. How close was I to that, Brett?
You're pretty close. I mean, he has a .393 BABIP, and this isn't a speedster or someone who hits the ball particularly hard. His career BABIP is .282. There is some serious regression coming with the batting average, and once that comes, I think he's kind of what people were hoping he was going to be. The power is pretty legit. I think he'll finish the season with certainly upwards of 20 home runs. I would think possibly close to 25 if he can stay healthy. But then again, he hasn't played more than. He played 53 games in 2015, 121 games in 2016. He's not exactly reliable from a health standpoint, but that honestly, that's really not a huge part of it. And the trade thing, he may get traded. I don't I don't like to draw that into value this early in the season because, one, we don't know if he's going to get traded. Two, we don't know where he's going to get traded to. He could get traded to Colorado. We have no idea. So
that'd be fun.
It would be fun. But yeah, I think he settles in. I think he settles in. Honestly, not kind of like Trevor's story, not with less upside, but you know, he settles in as this version of Trevor's story. I think 260 average, 20 home runs sort of pacing going forward. I think, you know, I don't see any great reason to think he's going to be something marginally different going forward, even though he's been extremely good so far this year.
Okay, so this begs an interesting question from a process standpoint. When you have a player like Cozart, whose values change substantially, at some point you can't really dismiss their performance anymore. So when you're compiling a ranking like this, or you're looking at Cozart's trade value, something like that, how much do you need to see before you change your opinion? Because I think that's the question everybody listening to this has to wonder, is at what point do you really start to buy into what Cozart's doing, and you sort of throw out the track record and say, well, he's healthy now, he's doing this now.
When he's the same hitter, it takes a really, really long time. If he's fundamentally changed something about his game or something noticeable, like we talked about Lindor, his fly ball rate is through the roof. I think then after 2 months, you can reasonably change your expectation going forward. With Cozart, I mean, yeah, his walk rate is up, but ostensibly he's the same hitter. He's just the good version of Cozart getting very fortunate in a couple of different ways. So I don't see any reason to jump in and say he's going to be noticeably different the rest of the season than we thought coming into the season yet. Okay. If he does this for over a season as the not the exact same hitter, but more or less the same hitter, then you can start to, maybe there's something there that he's doing differently that just doesn't show up in some of the more traditional things that we look at. But yeah, it's not there.
Yeah, we have this discussion, it feels like, every year, where a guy will come up and he'll start doing something differently, and it just takes a long time before we realize that they are, you know, like a Justin Turner, someone who truly has changed their career path. So, yeah, I'm with you there that it takes a long time. Let's move on to second base, which it's not really that interesting of a position anymore because it's so deep. You literally, if you're in a mixed league and you can't find a viable second baseman, you're doing it wrong. There's one guy in the five-star tier, that's Jose Altuve. There's not a lot to say there. The four-star tier is interesting because it has the usual suspects. You have your Robinson Cano, Daniel Murphy, Matt Carpenter, Brian Dozier's still in there. Jose Ramirez, though, I think is the interesting name, Mike, because we talked a lot about him in the offseason as a guy who was going to contribute across five categories and whether or not we thought he was going to be able to do that again. So are you surprised by what you've seen from Jose Ramirez? Because he's actually been really, really good this year.
No, I'm not really surprised at all. Ramirez is one of those cases where, you know, sometimes you want to look at talent as opposed to, you know, what the player is contributing from a fantasy perspective. And Ramirez was someone last year who ran a lot, didn't have a lot of power, a great contact tool. And what we're seeing so far this year is more power, less speed, and the contact's still there. So I'm a little bit surprised by the power. It's not like he's, you know, leading the league in home runs. Like, it's not like he's Justin Smoke and has 15 home runs or Yonder Alonso. And you're like, oh my God, like, I can't believe this is happening. It's more like, okay, well, Jose Ramirez could finish with 15 to 20 home runs instead of 10 or 11 home runs. And that's not really surprising. You're just talking about a talented hitter who is producing in a slightly or somewhat different way.
Brett, D. Gordon, to me, is fascinating, okay, because he has a .333 on base percentage, which is not 2015 level D. Gordon, but that's also the year in which he hit .333. He's hitting 281 right now. He's stolen 18 bases. He's only been caught twice, so he's been much more efficient when he does take off. Are we not paying enough attention to what D. Gordon's doing? Because it feels like this isn't peak D. Gordon. He's never going to get back to being the 2015 version of D. Gordon, but he's still really good, and in the current environment with steals, he's about as good as you're going to get outside of Billy Hamilton.
I would make the argument that he is 2015 D. Gordon. I mean, he's mostly on, he's a little bit behind the stolen base rate. I mean, the batting average was just stupid in 2015.
Yeah.
But in 2015, he hit like a 280 to 290 hitter, and that's exactly what he's doing now. He's actually, his approach has gotten slightly better, which, I don't think it really matters very much for a hitter like Gordon, who, is not really looking to drive the ball at all, but he's swinging less at pitches outside the zone. He's making a little bit more contact in general. None of those are bad things. I just, they don't have quite the positive impact that they might have on a power hitter. But the speed is a big deal. I mean, for all the talk of how impactful Billy Hamilton has been, and he certainly has been, Gordon having almost 20 steals already is extremely valuable in his own right. And, I'm not sure what the up-to-date numbers say. Mike probably knows, but what the up-to-date numbers say about his value for this season. But he's been, I think, just as good as people could have reasonably imagined he'd be coming into the season.
On pace to earn 26 in NL only, and that was his average salary. So you're dead on, Brett. And to assure our listeners, Brett is not looking at this data. I just put this together right before the show.
Very sounds nice. Good. Nicely done, Mike. So that begs the question, why is D. Gordon in the 3-star tier if he's, essentially Billy Hamilton, who we had in the 5-star tier at outfield?
Oh, he's not Billy Hamilton.
Part of why I put him in the 3-star tier is for the reason you cited, George, which is second base is such a thick and strong position that I look at Gordon, and while those steals are good, as Brett says, he's not quite on that Hamilton level. So as a result, I'm looking at a player, it's like, yeah, I like D. Gordon and he's solid, but he's not somebody I see as an elite player. If you want to put him in the 4-star, I'm okay with that. And if the average sustains and he hits like 300 as opposed to 280, he most definitely belongs there. I just don't quite see him as that 5-star guy. And, some of that too is it's kind of funny, but I know he has like just one home run this year, but beyond all the steals, Billy Hamilton, oddly enough, will pop the odd home run or get the odd inside the park home run. Gordon doesn't really do that.
No, that's fair. All right, so let's talk about Rougned Odor just for a minute here, because I don't think we can leave second base without having this discussion. He's hitting 204. If you played it on base league, you knew what you were getting into going into the year, but he has a 249 on base percentage, which is not great. He has 8 home runs, which is fine, but he's out of the middle of the order. He's been caught 4 times. He's only stolen 5 bases. You're just not getting a lot out of Rougned Odor. So, Brett, I just wonder, do you think Odor turns this around? Because he seems to be one of those guys who is hitting more fly balls and just not getting a ton of results out of it, and it's really killed the rest of his game.
Yeah, you did kind of know what you were signing up for with Odor when he started, and he's the kind of hitter that when he is getting unlucky, it can look pretty ugly like this. On the plus side, he's still running. I mean, that was sort of a question coming into this year. He stole 6 bases in 2015 and then 14 last year. And, it's a different value proposition if he's going to be in double digits in steals. He's got 5 so far. So I think that's reasonable, even though he is just a terrible base stealer. I don't know what the what are the exact numbers for his career? He's stolen 29 bases and he's gotten caught 25 times. He is terrible. He should not be allowed to steal ever. But for some reason, Prime Minister is letting him do it. So God bless in the meantime. But you know, the strikeouts are there, and this was not sort of the hitter he was billed at from when he was a prospect, because he's got this fascinating career arc where in the minors he was consistently like a 15% strikeout guy, and he was sort of billed as a quality hit tool player with, you know, albeit a very aggressive approach, but someone who could, you know, who could challenge to hit 300 at the major league level. And now, you know, you have this sort of all or nothing hitter who's striking out, you know, in the series striking out 22% at the major league level. Like, that just keeps ticking up, and part of it is pitchers taking advantage of his aggressiveness. But you know, whenever you're sort of on pace for around, you know, 20 plus homers and around 10 to 15 steals, you know, the batting average, having a batting average at 200 is going to sink a lot of your value, but that should not be the expectation. I do think, even though his on base is going to continue to be pretty terrible, I think 260 to 270 average out of Odor is a reasonable expectation.
I don't know if you're on his player page right now, but he's almost at negative one WAR for the season, which is crazy.
Well, he's bad at second base.
His negative fielding runs above average. Oh, it's just not good. Not a great scene there in Texas, but all right. There in the one star tier, okay, is that Chris Taylor who we have ranked there? Chris Taylor, Dodger Chris Taylor?
That would be him.
I really like Chris Taylor. Can you envision moving him up in the rankings if the Dodgers were willing to guarantee more playing time? Once, yes, Peterson comes back, and is that the big concern here?
That was all playing time. Okay. I really like him too. I just know that the Dodgers, like, I, in a perfect world, I would play Taylor over Chase Utley. I know Utley had a good streak there and had a couple weeks where he looked good, but overall, I prefer Taylor, but the Dodgers don't seem to be willing to do that. What I envision for Taylor is kind of a super utility role. And on principle, I have a hard time ranking someone above the one-star tier if they're not playing every day. It's just the idea of, again, this is a more of a straight mixed or slightly deeper mixed ranking than an only league ranking. And I just don't like the idea of putting a part-timer above the one-star.
Yeah, I can envision him. You know, right now he's hitting 316, seven home runs. He hit third the last couple of days for the Dodgers. He had that big grand slam over the weekend. I really like Chris Taylor, and I can envision them platooning him with Peterson in center, where Taylor handles the lefty matchups, and then they put him at second base or third if Turner's, you know, not able to play every single day with the hamstring. I think they could find a way to patch it together with him. So I definitely like Chris Taylor if you're looking at the one-star tier. On a scale of 1 to 10, are you guys – how concerned should fantasy owners be about Dustin Pedroia coming off the wrist injury? They're saying reports are he's going to be activated this weekend. But is he a guy you can count on in a mixed league the rest of the year or no?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, okay. I'm not on Pedroia. It does sound pretty good. He was, you know, he was doing Pedroia things before he went down. Not, you know, obviously not hitting for really any power. I think the wrist isn't going to help that. I think this might be more of you know, 2013 to 2015 Pedroia, where I think you might be lucky to get 10 homers out of him, but the counting stats will be good. You know, he's been walking more than he's striking out. The batting average should be excellent, and you kind of take the value there. But yeah, injury is always a risk with him.
Okay, cool. Let's move to third base. We'll move along quickly here. There's not a ton to talk about at third base. You have the 5-star tier, which is Chris Bryant and Nolan Arenado. You have the 4-stars, which is Brett, your boy, Miguel Sano, destroyer of baseballs, which is very fun. he's at the top of that tier, by the way, ahead of Josh Donaldson, who's just come back from the Blue Jays. Jake Lamb is the guy I want to talk about, because I did not see this coming, where Jake Lamb, who had just an atrocious second half a year ago, was going to revert back to being first half Jake Lamb, who was an all-star. So this was pretty unexpected. I'll throw it out to whoever wants it, but what do you guys think about Jake Lamb right now? Does it feel like he's going to stay in this four-star tier, you know, moving forward? When we do these rankings again in the offseason, is he still going to be in this tier?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think he's... I want to see him do it over a full season. You know, it's kind of tough, because he was really good in the first half last year. You know, look date by date. I mean, he was pretty much at this point last year, he was hitting .277, .359, .538. And right now he is hitting, where's he hitting? He's hitting something now. I'm not there right now, but he's hitting, doing more or less the same thing. I think he had like a .910, .920 OPS, if I'm not mistaken. He's .280, .368, .559. So yeah, .927 OPS. So, a little bit better, maybe, you know, 6 to 7% better, but, you know, I don't think it is sustainable. I think he's very good. I don't think he's going to be this type of average and power hitter at the same time over the long term.
Mike, what do you got on Jake Lamb?
I mean, he was hurt last year, and that was part of it. I could see him being either a 3 or 4 star tier guy. Still some of the same problems against lefties, so that's where there could be some slippage. Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who the power certainly is there for him, but I see some of the same concerns that Brett has, where he could be exposed and should be exposed as a full-timer in the second half. I would expect his number, the power, to be there in the second half, but the average and some of the other numbers to drop.
My favorite storyline, at least on my Twitter, is whenever someone will tweet at me and they'll go, is Justin Turner going to hit for any power this year? It's like, the dude's batting .345. What do you want? So I always love that. He's always been a guy who's picked it up. I think last year at the end of May, he had something like 3 home runs, and then he went out and he finished close to 30. So Justin Turner's a guy, once the weather warms up and the ball starts to carry a little more, he's going to start to hit home runs. So he's coming back from the hamstring. I think next week he's on a rehab assignment right now. So I'd expect early next week he's back and the power should be there with Justin Turner. Is there anything to say about Alex Bregman at this point? Because he got off to that horrible start, but then he's kind of been the guy we wanted coming into the year. The rest of the last couple of weeks here for the Astros, who have just an insane offense right now. So, Brett, has Alex Bregman reverted to the guy we sort of thought we were going to get coming into the year?
I, to an extent, yeah. I think, you know, the question with Bregman, at least the big question with him, is whether the sort of power spike that he saw in the minors is going to translate to the majors. So far, he's at least still pacing for, you know, not quite 20 home runs, but sort of in that 15 to 20 range. The batting average with Bregman, I'm not concerned about at all. He is a hitter. He's got that skill. And I think this is more about adjusting to the majors in the long haul. I think he should be a hitter eventually who will challenge 300 pretty much annually. If he's a 15 to 20 home run hitter at that point, then you're talking about, you know, you're talking about someone who's probably not all that much different than Justin Turner. But, you know, Bregman has the advantage of being 23 years old as opposed to 33 years old. So the, you know, there's a little bit of speed, but nothing that I would overly rely on from him. I think if you get 10, you take it and just consider yourself lucky. But I think he's going to continue to get better over the rest of the season, and while he might not get to that sort of level in 2017, I think he'll get there in 2018 and 2019.
All right, we ranked Yoán Moncada in the 3-star tier, just in case you were wondering where he fits into these rankings. He should be up relatively soon, I would assume. He's hitting like 360 in AAA right now, so get excited because it's about to happen, folks, very shortly.
The Yomer Sanchez story is nice, but he really should not be an obstacle for Moncada.
I would hope not. They traded some guy named Chris Sale for Moncada, so yeah. I think you have to play him. Eugenio Suarez has been outstanding. Is there anything else to really say about that? He's been a really nice value if you drafted him. I don't think he had a huge price tag coming into the year. I don't think there's anything much else to say about Joey Gallo. He's doing Joey Gallo things, like hitting 200 with a lot of home runs. Nick Castellanos is the last guy at the position I think we need to talk about. Maybe Ryan Healy, too. I don't know if you guys have strong Ryan Healy takes. But Nick Castellanos has been pretty bad all year. He's a guy who had a monster spring training. We've been talking about Castellanos as a potential sort of quote-unquote breakout guy for a few years now, but I don't know if it's coming together. The last couple of weeks maybe have been encouraging, but still kind of underwhelming. Does it feel that way to you guys? Like, just this Castellanos thing isn't coming together.
I think this has become more of an adjustment year than I think we were expecting to see. I mean, the night of all of the bad in his stat line, the one thing that is at least a positive is that he's being a little bit more discerning in what he swings at. He's, you know, last year he had a 54% swing rate. This year he's down to 49.4%. He's making slightly less contact, which is not great, but the change in approach is something that I think he'll continue to carry forward. I do think that we're going to get to a point where Castellanos will do what I think we were expecting him to do coming into the season. But, it's with someone of his sort of, discipline, even with it being slightly improved, I think it's going to be kind of touch and go, and it's an understandable boat to want to jump off of at this point. But you know, there's still talent there. It's just he's turning into sort of a post type poster child at this point, where at some point he'll have a season where it clicks and you just won't know when it's coming.
Like Justin Smoke at 30 years old, and you're like, oh, okay. Let's move over to first base. There's not a lot to talk about the top of the position, and we're getting late on this, so I don't want to be here all night. The 5-star, Paul Goldschmidt, Joey Votto, Miguel Cabrera, obviously. The 4-star tier, Anthony Rizzo fell down to this tier, and I ended up doing the write-up for this position, so you can go read it at Baseball Prospectus. That's where you can find all the position write-ups. We have a really awesome fantasy team at BP, and they do a good job, and we cover it every position here, so definitely take the time to go look at that. It'll help you out if you're scouring the waiver wire or you're looking at potential trades. I think it's a pretty good summary of the landscape. But Mike, Anthony Rizzo down in the 4-star tier, do you think he has, well, obviously we know he has the talent to get back into the 5-star tier, but do you see that as a realistic possibility with him?
It's possible. Yeah, no, my thing with Rizzo has always been that the real life value exceeds the fantasy value, particularly if you're talking about a batting average league as opposed to an on-base league. You know, he's a guy who doesn't have a huge batting average. He hits for power, but you know, except for one season, it's never been like a prodigious type of power. You know, the funny thing about him is he is running a little bit more this year. And while I don't see him stealing 17 like he did that one season, I could see him stealing 10 to 12. So, yeah, he could get there. I just feel like Rizzo, and some of this is just the position compared to some of the other players here. It's not a knock on Rizzo. It's more that he's not quite as good from a fantasy perspective as those other guys on top.
Yeah, it feels like there's almost a like a mid tier there between the 4 and 5 stars where you kind of put Rizzo.
Yeah, and Freddie Freeman, you know, if not for the injury, would have moved up to the 5-star too and been there as well and above Rizzo.
Yeah, I got so many.
The next time we do this, Anthony, Rizzo of second base eligibility.
Yeah, that's right. We'll have to include him in second base, which I'm sure our readers will absolutely love because they're completely chill about the way we handle positions at Baseball Prospectus.
Yeah,
chill is definitely the word I was going to use.
Yeah, I can't wait for that comment. We got so many comments about Freddie Freeman's ranking down in the 3-star tier, and it's like he's going to be out at least another month. Like, he's not coming back till after the All-Star break. So...
Did you address any of those, George, in terms did you respond to those people or did you just let them lie?
Not yet. I haven't gotten to it yet.
Well, just a general note, I did the pitchers. I tend to be conservative on injuries just because you just never know, and it's better to assume the longer timeline than to say, all right, well, this guy's going to be back in 2 weeks, and then he's back in 4.
Right, and we also don't know if Freeman's going to return as the same hitter in terms of the caliber he was. We don't know if the injury is going to affect him going forward. That's a variable we won't know until we see him play again. So I don't see how you can justify putting him over guys like we have in the 3-star tier with Edwin, Ryan Zimmerman. I just don't think you can do it in just a redraft.
By the way, I just need to interrupt this. Scooter Gannett is homered 4 times tonight. Am I seeing that correctly?
He has.
I just want to make sure I'm not like having an embolism here, and that's correct. Okay, carry on.
Not only does he have 4 home runs, but he hit for the home run cycle. He had a solo home run, a 2-run home run, a 3-run home run, and the grand slam.
Oh, I see that. Wow, 10 runs better than
checking off all the boxes.
So if you recommended him in DFS, congratulations, you actually are better at this than anyone,
guys. That's 2017 is really weird. I don't know if you've noticed that, but this year is kind of crazy. I don't even know where to go from this. Let's talk about.
I had to comment on that because that was something.
Yeah. Let's speaking of weird. Let's talk about Ryan Zimmerman, Brett. At this point, what do you do? You just ride the wave and enjoy it, right? The rest of the season.
Oh yeah.
Just whatever happens, absolutely. You've gotten your money's worth. Yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah, you're playing with house money. This is the fun part.
I like the way you said that. The 2-star tier. Let's talk about Yonder Alonso for just a minute, and some of the other guys who've. I hate to use the term breakout, but these guys have sort of reinvented themselves, and they're all sort of doing it in different ways. You have Justin Smoke, who's been more aggressive on pitches that he can handle and has done a nice job with that. We talked a couple episodes ago on this podcast with Joshua Hausam of BP Toronto, and he talked a lot about what Justin Smoke's doing well. And I've written about Justin Bour in the free agent watch all year and the progress he's made against left-handed pitching, which is, I don't think, anything we could have anticipated coming into the year. And then you have Yonder Alonso, who's just hitting for more fly balls. He's punishing the ball, as he put it, and looks like a guy who's sort of figured some things out at the plate. And I guess I'll go to you, Mike. Which one of these do you... You can throw Lucas Duda in this category too. Which of these guys would you be most interested in targeting if you needed a first baseman, and you were able to go out and acquire one of these guys in a trade? Who would be the one that interests you the most?
Well, if you're throwing Duda in there, I have to go with Duda. You know, Duda at one point, and this is, you know, was obviously a small sample size thing because the injury, was out OPSing Joey Votto. I, you know, Lucas Duda is just one of those players, you know, and I know Brett, I know you feel about him too. He's just so underrated in terms of what he can do. And I know some of that is if you watch Lucas Duda play, you're like, yeah, he just looks underwhelming and he's kind of slow footed, but the guy can hit. And when he's healthy, which he is right now, he's a hitter that I want to have on my team.
Oh, I just looked and Scooter Jeanette is on the waiver wire in one of my home leagues. Oh, he's getting picked up tomorrow.
Lucas Duda is hitting 279, 385, 598. What does Lucas Duda have to do to get the respect that he deserves while he's healthy?
Well, doesn't that speak to... This is something I've touched on in the free agent columns. Just there are so many other first basemen who've hit this year. Like, if you didn't get one of the top four or five guys, like, you still had an opportunity to pick up, you know, a Smoke, a Boer, an Alonso. You maybe are still kicking around with Josh Bell, you know, Edwin Encarnacion. Like, there are just so many guys at first base that it was almost impossible to not get somebody, right?
Yeah, I mean, some of it, too, is, again, it's just the injury. Like, if you look at it, so coming into today, Brandon Belt and Tommy Joseph are out-earning Lucas Duda, albeit barely. And, you know, it's some of that is just Lucas Duda has 119 at-bats to Joseph's 173 and Belt's 209. So Duda's flying under the radar because he missed a pretty good chunk of time.
I didn't even mention Zimmerman and guys like Mark Reynolds. Eric Thames.
Yeah, it's been Thames is he, and you didn't mention Justin Bour, who went on the DL today, but what was just ridiculous in the month of May.
Yeah, first base is pretty loaded right now, so that's why a guy like Albert Pujols, you can just cut. You do not need to own Albert Pujols if you're in a mixed league, I don't think. It's reached that point, guys. I'm sorry.
No, I think that's true.
His at bats are brutal.
By the way, Eric Thames, since you mentioned him, where would you guess as of coming into today? Where would you guess he's ranked in NL only overall as a hitter?
Oh, God, Brett, you want to go first?
Not his dollar value, just his rank.
Oh,
are you talking about in NL standard only. Or OBP?
Standard.
Standard. I am going to say this is great to
this is should great be next week's show right by the way, but I'm just really curious to
guess
to
the rankings.
No, just like I'll talking say, about valuation.
I'll say eighth overall. That feels right.
I think he's I overall among all hitters in the NL. 19th.
Brett is a lot closer. He is 26th.
Oh,
he's fallen that much in a month and change. I mean, he's still really good. I mean, you know, he's on pace for 24, and that's great. But you know, he's hitting 267, which is a big part of why he's not higher up.
This is why we tell people don't freak out after the first 2 weeks of the season or whatever. You know, you just keep everything in check because it's kind of gonna all even out. Let's. I only have one question about catcher. It's a really boring position. Like you have Posey and the five stars. It's about. Well, I was going to talk about Alex Avila, but he's pretty awesome. He hit a home run tonight. Alex Avila has been fantastic. I look at the ownership numbers because I'm doing the free agent column every week. Like I could write about him every week. The ownership numbers are stupid, but yeah, this is our last position here, and I want to round out by asking you guys about Jonathan Lucroy, because he had a little bit of a stretch here the last couple of weeks where he was getting better, and then he's really tailed off in the last week or so, it feels like. What do you do with a guy like Jonathan Lucroy? Because obviously, like, Yasmani Grandal is great. Gary Sanchez is doing Gary Sanchez things, but it feels like Lucroy is the guy to me that has really taken a step back at the position that I wasn't expecting.
I think given that it's catcher, I think you have to stick with him. But, you know, his ground ball rate is through the roof. And even though he's not striking out like he usually doesn't, I think at best, I think this is going to look like one of those Yadi Molina empty average seasons, which is not a bad thing. There's value to be had there, but I would be surprised if he ends up with more than 10 to 12 home runs at this point. I'd be pretty surprised. Yeah.
All right. We had Alex Avila, Mike, in the two star tier. Is there any difference between him and a guy like Evan Gattis right now? Who's in the three?
Right now, no. You know, the one thing about Avila to just kind of look at or keep in mind is that he is still being treated as a platoon player. John Hicks was getting the half of the starts behind the plate last week just because they faced some lefties and they're in the same position this week. So that's my only concern with Avila. I'm okay with believing in the performance, but it does seem that they're not going to quite use him as a full-timer. Now, I know it's catcher, so that's not quite as important as it is another position. But if he's only going to play 50, 60% of the time, that's the big difference for me.
Here's a fun question, Brett. Who would you rather have right now if you were the Tigers, Victor Martinez or Alex Avila at DH?
Right now, Avila. But, I mean, I don't expect that answer to be the same in a month.
I'd almost take that bet right now. That's it, guys. We did it. We covered every position. That was a lot of fun. So,
woohoo!
go us.
I think we're making some progress on this show. It only took a few years, but we're finally hitting our stride. So make sure you go check out all of the content we put up at BP. We put up these rankings at every position and along with some great commentary. So make sure you go check that out. Before we depart here, we do have to do expert fab real quick. We're going to do like 5 minutes of fab talk, and hopefully we can avoid Eric Young Jr., the entire time. So, Mike, we can start on labor mixed, but who's somebody that we should talk about? Because I think Jeff Hoffman's a guy who's interesting.
Yeah, Hoffman. I mean, if we're not going to talk about Young, Hoffman is the guy that I kind of wanted to talk about. And, you know, it's funny because one of our writers mentioned this in a recent BP column. I think it might have been in his call-up. It might have been Wilson, but I'd have to go look. But if you had said at the beginning of the year that the Rockies' rotation was blocked and Jeff Hoffman couldn't get in, you would have been like, well, that just doesn't seem right. But that's kind of what happened. And Hoffman's a guy who in 2016, he struggled first time through, also Coors. I've only seen one of his starts or a piece of one of his starts, but he looks good this year. And you know, I know that he's supposed to only be up for a couple starts, but he's a guy I'd try to stash in mixed, and you definitely want a piece of him in only, obviously.
Can I pour some cold water on Jeff Hoffman for just a second?
Yeah, here? If you want to.
All right. I think he's really good. If you look at like his PCL numbers this year, they're not that great. He's not striking out a ton of guys, but right now he's over 11 strikeouts per nine, under a walk per nine, which is wild because he's a guy who's had major sort of control issues, but I think he's a little bit of a product of the matchup.
The thing about Hoffman though is his DRA outside of what he did in Colorado last year has been 3.18 or lower. Okay. So he is not entirely a PCL cautionary tale.
Yeah, but his last two starts at San Diego, at Philadelphia, against two of the worst offenses in baseball.
We can agree on that, right? Yeah. No, that's fair. And you know, if he's got the Diamondbacks at home, you in a mixed league, you want to bench him. Yeah.
Moment of truth, Brett. He gets the Cubs on the road this weekend. Do you use Jeff Hoffman?
Why wouldn't you? I mean, that's really not a scare. If you believe in Hoffman, that's not a terrible matchup. Weirdly enough, the Cubs haven't been hitting. Wrigley's not a hitter's park. Unless the wind is blowing out on a given day, but I think that it's not a deterrent, that matchup. You know, I'd much rather start him at Wrigley than start him pretty much against anybody at home.
All right, that's fair. Mike, we should talk about Eric Young Jr. What do you have on him? How should we view him? Because he can run
As a source for temporary steals.
Okay.
You know, do you want to talk about what I wrote about him, you know, being a 30th round pick and
yes,
one of five 30th round picks from that draft to make the majors, which is quite the anomaly and interesting, but it doesn't affect his fantasy value. He is what he is.
All right. Labor mixed here. Anyone else interesting? Brett, did you pick up anyone of these guys, or what's going on with you in this league? We haven't discussed this in a while.
I did not. My problem in labor is that I have a terrible, terrible pitching staff, and right now I have a full bench. So I was going to try to pick up Jeff Locke, and that is where my pitching staff is at because he has two starts this week, but I did not have the roster spot because I kept Pedroia in my active lineup since he'll be back on Friday because Tim Beckham had only played 19 games at second base last year, and I could not slide him over to cover Pedroia since I have Corey Seager and Troy Tulowitzki at shortstop and middle infield respectively. So I am in full throw against the wall mode from a pitching standpoint. I still think my offense is pretty good. And I have, you know, I think I have 44 offensive points, 43, 44, but I'm hovering right around 60 total points. So that's just how it goes sometimes.
That's the way it goes. All right. Anyone on the only sides, Mike, that we should discuss? I don't think so.
It was a pretty quiet week. This was a trivia week for me in the Fab Logs just because there wasn't much there. So, you know, the trivia I found is that Ben Lively was the eighth pitcher, going back to 1913 when Baseball References Play Index goes back to. Eighth pitcher who has seven innings in his major league debut, seven innings, no strikeouts, and one run or fewer. So that's quite the club.
I'm still looking at the Scooter Gennett box score in disbelief. Wait, what was his one hit that wasn't a home run? A single?
He had a single. That was another. Actually, that was another note on him too. Is he? I believe he's the first player with a four home run game with five hits.
It's so nuts.
I know. That's why I love baseball. It's so random that you get like in basketball, you're not going to get like the third string center like scoring 50 points in a game. It's just not going to happen.
That would be a game.
All right, but it's just not going to happen. Like the worst player in the Celtics is not going to score 40 in one night.
Wait, that happened, Kelly Olynyk.
Oh yeah, that, you're right.
That literally just happened. All right, let's. I think we're done, guys. Let's take a break, come back, wrap up the show.
All right.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 136 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us and the entire fantasy team on baseballprospectus.com. If you sign up for a super premium membership, you get exclusive access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. Send us your trade questions, free agent pickups, prospect questions, you name it. We're here to help you. That's with the super premium membership. You can follow us on Twitter. Brett is at BrettSayerBP. Mike is at MikeGianella, and I'm at George Bissell. Just a reminder, BP Ballpark events are back. The first one is coming up on June 17th. It's at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Visit BaseballProspectus.com to purchase your tickets today. I'm looking at the event details as we speak. It says Dan Duquette will be there, the GM of the Orioles. You should definitely go check that out. You can also meet up with Craig Goldstein if that's something that would appeal to you. The tickets are $52. There are still tickets available. Make sure you go do that today. It's going to be fun. We have three other events, too, coming up. Citi Field, PNC Park, and Target Field out in Minnesota. So make sure you go check those out today, the BP Ballpark events. They're going to be a lot of fun. So don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. For Brett Sayre and Mike Gianellis, George Bessel saying thanks for listening. Until our next show, we're actually going to be doing another podcast this week. I'm going to have Ryan Bloomfield on to discuss James Paxton's return and performance. He's pitching right now, so I'm going to go watch that. Have a good night, everybody. See you next week.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Linick, man.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that.
Oh, man.